Welcome to another episode of Journeys in Entrepreneurship. Today, we have Kofo Akikugbe, who is a previous recipient of Faith Foundation's Model Entrepreneur Award. Kofo is the Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer of Secure ID. Secure ID is a MasterCard, Visa, and Verve certified smart card personalization bureau and digital technology company. She also founded SID Digital Limited, a digital solutions company that focuses on digital identity, digital payment, and automated fare collection systems, as well as Transport Payment Solutions Limited, which is focused on solutions for transport projects across various transport systems. Interviewing her is the 2020 Faith Model Entrepreneur Award recipient, Tayo Uviosu. Tayo is the founder and group CEO of Paga. Paga is a mobile payment company building an ecosystem to enable people digitally send and receive money, as well as creating simple financial access for everyone. Join us as we listen to their journeys in entrepreneurship in the fintech space.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Journeys in Entrepreneurship brought to you by the Faith Foundation. My name is Tayo Uviosu. I'm the founder and CEO of Paga, and it's a real pleasure to be here today with Kofo Akinkube, who is the founder and CEO of Secure ID. Let's get into it. Hi, Kofo.
Hi.
I'm a big fan of yours, and I've been a big fan of yours well before I met you. And I'm super excited to have this conversation with you. Today, we're just gonna have a casual discussion about your journey in entrepreneurship. I sent a tweet earlier this week, and I said, you know, I'm excited to speak to a trailblazer because I see you that way. And I said, this person started their first company in 1998. And just think about starting a business in Nigeria in 1998, right? And is the founder of two very successful technology companies. So let us start from the beginning. Can you share with us a little bit about your early childhood, right? Where did you grow up? What was your family life like? And just give us some insight into your background.
Oh, wow, thank you. Okay, so I'm number three of 10 children.
10 children?
10 children,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so grew up in Lagos. Mm. Basically had most of my education in Lagos, had a bit abroad, mostly here.
Yeah.
My dad was a stickler for getting good grades, usually there's competition even between the siblings.
Sure.
Who's going to get the first, who's going to get the second,
you know,
and so on. So I had that kind of sort of background and mindset.
Yeah.
But skip forward, ended up in banking in my career. That was my first career.
Yeah.
And from banking, started my entrepreneurial journey.
Got it.
But if I had to rewind a bit, I did mathematics in school.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to the school. I don't want you to go too far because I really do want to understand your childhood because and being number three of 10 already tells us something, right? Because I have to imagine I came from five kids, so I can only imagine the fight wanting your own attention among 10 kids. But what activities did you enjoy as a child?
Sports, lot of sports.
Which sport were you really into?
Squash.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Did a lot of squash. Did a bit of netball.
Okay.
But squash and swimming.
Were these things that your parents encouraged you to go do, or you on your own?
It was sort forced
of...
on us because it was actually squash was actually meant to be a punishment. we went out partying when we weren't supposed to go, and so on and so forth. So we snuck out of the house, and my dad was like, "Okay, you guys have nothing to do, so I'm going to get you a squash coach, and you're going to be going to your club
all the time."
And we ended up loving it, when we then went abroad, some of us were playing for the school, for squash. So so it's...
Do you still play today?
I still play,
but great.
not as regular, but I still do.
And when you were a child, what did you think you'd want to do when you grow up? Like, do you remember?
I'm not sure when I was a child, but I knew that when I grew up a little bit, mm-hmm. Just probably during my youth corps surveys, okay. I'd always thought that I would be in an office, corporate mm-hmm. office, okay. working for a large organization.
Got it.
And just growing through the ranks and, you know, becoming yeah. an executive director, very senior
yeah.
executive within that organization.
Okay, so you thought just, you know, your quote-unquote career, typical career path.
Typically right? career path.
Got it.
Definitely Got it. Not entrepreneurship.
Got it. Mm. So these days, I mean, look, it's still very rare to find women in STEM, you know, in science, technology, entrepreneurship, and math. So I can only imagine what it was when you were growing up. And as I was thinking about that, I wondered, you know, you mentioned mathematics. What led you to go study mathematics? Like, why math?
You see, the math story is actually, I would say probably that as what has sort of largely shaped me for what I am today.
Tell us more, yeah.
Because when I was in secondary school, like we used to call it in yeah. those days, I hated maths.
Interesting.
I actually hated maths. And but something in me said, wait a minute, I've got to conquer this fear. Mm. You know, it can't be this bad.
Mm.
Anyway, eventually I did.
Yeah.
I had a stepbrother that really loved maths. Mm. And he took me through. So all okay. thanks to him.
Interesting.
And I loved maths, and I ended up doing ad maths.
Okay.
And I thought, wow. And I ended up wanting to do more and more of it.
Yeah.
And so that's how come I, you know, sort of ended up in university studying mathematics.
And when you were in university doing this, like, what did you think you would use it at the time?
Yeah. So at that time, so of course I went in there. When I went into uni, the first thing that struck me was, we were only two women in class out of all the people in class. Mm-hmm. So that was one.
Yeah.
The second one is I can remember walking into the professor's office, and he sort of looked at me and said, you,
yeah,
maths. I said, well, we'll just give her
now,
a year.
Now, this is a Unilag.
These are Unilag. Okay, she'll be yeah. out. We'll just give
wow.
her a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, so just two of us as women in yeah. the class. And so I had to prove a point. So
yeah.
I've always had to prove a point in everything, you
sure,
know.
Sure.
So and because I'm always in the minority,
yeah.
you know, one kind of stands out and yeah. wanting to make the best of it.
Yeah.
So I loved maths, and I think most people that do maths actually they do it because they love it.
Mm.
But one thing I knew I didn't want to do was to teach it at okay. a later stage. So to do a PhD
yeah.
and become
yeah.
a teacher. No, I thought no.
Yeah.
I thought I would use it and go into the corporate world.
Got it.
You know, and probably do an MBA, which I did mm-hmm. afterwards, and, you know, go into the corporate world. So I yeah. never thought that I would actually end up
teaching,
being yeah. a lecturer in maths.
So this is very interesting, because you went after a subject that you initially did not like.
Yeah.
And I mean, where did that resilience come from?
I asked myself too.
Yeah, I'm really curious. Like, because it's, and I'm really curious as to get your view on it, because I think that's something that I would imagine has served you very well on your journey as an entrepreneur.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, so. Definitely. I mean, when I talk about uncharted waters and sort of like overcoming fears.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the thing about entrepreneurs is that they've got to deal with a lot of fears. Mm. So I would say, yes, that served
yeah.
me well. Overcoming that fear
yeah.
actually sort of created that springboard or
yeah.
foundation in meeting anything along
yeah.
the way.
And talking about fear, I mean, it's something I've heard you talk about. As I was preparing for this, I got that theme. And for all, you know, a lot of people watching us today are people who probably aspire to start their own businesses and to do stuff. And so, you know, the question always is like, sort of, how do you overcome fear? Like, how do you take that step, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how you think about that first step, right? How did you think about risk? How did you think about ambiguity? Right, in just in general, in terms of overcoming fear of doing something.
Well, as The thing is that it starts with very little steps.
Okay.
If there is something, if there is some fear that you overcame, you then use that as what do you call it? You then use that as a reference point.
Sure.
Whenever you meet obstacles, that I overcame that.
Yeah.
So I can do this. You know.
Yeah.
And you know, as you do, as you take those little steps and take those little references, you know, confidence builds up.
Sure.
You know, and every time you meet those obstacles, you're able to able to overcome them.
That's really cool. I like that. So it's you know, think about it in smaller chunks, right? Take one, you know, take smaller steps, and as you overcome one, you know that, hey, I can do it. I can do it again. Love that. So tell me about banking, because you went to become a banker. Was it just the thing to do because everybody was doing banking, or was it something that you like really said, I think I would love being a banker?
I'm not sure it was I love banking, but at that time it was, that was a place to be. It had this very corporate demeanor about it. And you know, and having to work in one of the best banks at that time was like, wow, you know. So I went into it and I absolutely loved it because, again, I was dealing with figures. So it was all about financial analysis, credit analysis, and so on. So it was nice. So I ended up loving it for some time, for as long as I was there.
And while you were there, like, did you have mentors that you looked up to or, and that you've kept in touch with or?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
But then you left it.
Yeah.
And this is, to me, was one of the best parts of me thinking about this. Like you didn't have anything you just said, I'm done with this. Yeah. Tell us about that. Like, and tell us about that decision and that, and how did your family specifically like react to it? Both, you know, at this point you're married, you have kids. Right. So how did all of that, what was the conversation at the dinner table?
You're amazing. So, so like, yes, you know, one thing I always say, this personality and just being disciplined in everything that you do obviously served me well whilst I was in banking. So you want to do something, you want to do it well. I don't know whether it's the mathematical background, you know, because one plus
very
one
logical,
must have an answer, you know. So, but it's, I've always been extremely focused, you know, wanting to do things well. Okay, this is where I'm going.
Yeah.
And so on. So, but when I got married, I remember, I mean, even my husband knew that I was very, very career focused and he sort of respected that path.
Great.
You know, and allowed me to be.
Yeah.
But by the time I had my first child, okay, I could cope. But by the time I had the second, I then thought, oh, wait a minute. I think I want to do school runs like every other woman. You know, I want to be able to take them to school, pick them up from school. And so on. I need to spend more time, you know. And at that point of my career, I was already sort of on the way up, you know. And I thought, what am I going to do? But I had nothing. I just didn't know what I wanted to do. But I just knew that it was time to leave, you know. And so I left without knowing what the next steps were going to be. I don't know if that was a smart idea, but I'm also a very prayerful person. So there are a lot of times I pray about things and feel that, okay, I think it's time to move.
Yeah.
You know, so I felt that way. And
how did your husband react though? Like, what was his?
Luckily for me, he was like, yeah,
okay,
that's good if that's what you want to do.
Yeah,
yeah, that's good. And so I did leave and had fun, you know, you know, doing all the school runs and baby runs and so on and so forth. But I did know at the back of my mind that no, I wasn't leaving to stay at home.
Okay.
I was leaving, yes, to spend more time with my girls, but also to find a path that would allow me to benefit the two, have a challenging career, and also be able to maintain the motherhood you know, aspect of it, the work-life balance.
Yeah.
And so that's why I left, you know, but not, there was no plan as to where where was I going to go to.
Now this is, what year was this, by the way? Like,
oops.
96, 97, somewhere
yeah,
around there.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just trying to think of where the world was then and where it is today, right? And as a leader today, and I'm going to fast forward real quick and I'll come back, but just staying on this theme of work-life balance, particularly for women, right? But not just women, but the men as well, right? One family, one kids. How do you encourage that with your team, right? To take that time off, right? If they want to, and for it not to affect their career. Because I think a lot of people, that's a big question that they ask, right? Whether it's the women or the men, it's like, if I take that time off, it affects my progression in my career. How do you, not for yourself now, because you've tackled it for yourself, but for other people, how do you think about it?
Well, one thing I do is, and I've had a few women, one or two women that had a very, what would I say, promising career within the company.
Sure.
And so when they came to me to say, I want to leave because my son is in America and I want to go and stay with him, I would encourage it and say, look, whenever you're ready to come back, we will take you back.
Fantastic.
You know, I remember another lady that came to me to say, my husband has been transferred to Port Harcourt and I want to go and stay with him and so on and so on. So that I would encourage.
Yeah.
Because if they felt that way at that time, and because I think the family is also very important.
Yeah.
And you know, when we're talking about success, we're talking about all round success.
Sure.
You know, you really can't be successful in your career and not be successful in the other areas. It's all sort of
together.
Connected together.
Yeah.
You know, so it's an area that I would definitely encourage.
Yeah.
You know, if they feel that way. Even if it's to take some time off and then come back later, yes, it's something that we would definitely encourage.
That's awesome.
We've
That's
had
awesome.
Some people take a break and they're still being paid the salary, but they're taking that break.
Sure.
You know.
No, that's great. And staying on this theme a little bit, I mean, you started your first company in 1998, as we said before. Mm. You know, and I'm curious sort of, you know, what you think were the biggest challenges that you faced, specifically because you are a woman. Right. And I wonder how you think those are different today, if at all, for a woman starting a business in 2021.
In 2021.
Yeah.
Well, I should actually ask you. You know, I think it's a lot easier today.
Hmm.
To be honest, would I say I felt it at the time I started? Maybe I did not feel the gender aspect of it. I was just focused on my vision.
Yeah.
And I ran with it without looking left and right.
Yeah.
I did a business plan like any other business plan would be, sitting on the table of the person reviewing it, not caring whether this is a business plan of a company founded by a woman or is a business plan. It's, does this business, is it viable?
Yeah.
Okay. And so that's the sort of mindset I had all along. And I think that kind of helped me, you know, rather than think of, I'm different from every other person.
Yeah.
But you are right that as I grew in my entrepreneurial journey and as the company, you know, grew from one level to the other, I realized that the gender bits came out a little bit. Because you go for meetings, whether it's in France or wherever it is, and you're actually the only woman there, you know? So, I mean, it was like, oh, wow, what's going on here,
you know?
And you really don't want to be seen as a man because you are a woman, you know? So, but I the gender thing to me was, I played on its benefits.
Okay.
You know.
Tell me more about that. When you say that.
More of its benefit is, you know, just more intuitive in the way you think. A lot more emotional intelligence. A lot more able to multitask, because that's the makeup of a woman. Being able to handle a lot of things at the same time. And still able to see through.
Yeah.
You know. Not giving up at the slightest obstacle, you know. So to me, I played on the benefits of that as opposed to looking at the
yeah.
the other aspect of it. But I would say in 1998, starting the business was, I mean, moving from a corporate environment yeah. to an entrepreneurial environment was just seamless for me. I remember when I was in banking in those days, you have your name tag on your desk.
Yeah.
You know, when I started my company, I still had my name tag on my desk, you know.
Wow.
So that sort of thing. So,
so
and that helped, you know. Yeah. It helped me to start my entrepreneurial journey on a good structure.
Got it.
You know, so if a staff is coming to my office and say, we have to do this, I'm like, can you not put it in a memo? You know, because that is the way that you have been trained, you know. So,
you took the training from your work experience into your first company.
Yes.
And on, I'd imagine. Fantastic.
And now, it was very easy to separate yourself from the entity. So the company was one entity and you were another entity. And that's the way,
that's,
you know,
really
I
important
was
because I think a lot of people that start businesses in Nigeria don't necessarily do that.
Yeah.
It's all one thing. So before you started that business, this, you know, I understand, you know, you had this period and you were really disciplined about looking for what it was that you would do. Now, I understand that, you know, it was in speaking to a mentor that he mentioned the idea of biometric technology. Do you remember who that was? Like who that mentor was and where you were? Okay. Can you just imagine what your life would have been if you didn't take the step to go research and figure this thing out?
Right.
I was sitting there thinking, you know, you literally, you got this idea, you researched it, and you saw a conference in DC, and you said, honey, I'm going to DC.
Right.
I'd be like, for what? Where are you going to do? You know? So tell us, like, I mean, what would your life have been? What would you be doing right now if you didn't take that step?
I don't even want to think about it. All I know is that I like to do things that I enjoy doing.
Sure.
And one thing I know I enjoy doing is I enjoy succeeding.
Mm.
I enjoy making a difference, creating value.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Knowing that what you're doing is creating some kind of value for a problem that was there.
Yeah.
That's
problem
that,
solving.
Yes, problem solving.
Mathematics.
So that makes me happy. Oh, probably.
Back to, back to mathematics. It's all mathematics.
Yeah, it's all about that. Like,
No, that's really cool. I mean, I think you know, the other thing that I was thinking about you when, you know, so one is you took that step, you overcome many fears and, you know, and you got people to follow you. And, you know, how do you get people to follow you? Like, what's your theory, if you have a specific theory around leadership and around leading people? Like, what's the, what is there an overarching sort of theory you lean to around that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I always say an idea is like a dream. And the way I always look at the value chain is from vision to execution.
Okay.
Right? And a dream only becomes a vision when you throw some action on the dream. Otherwise, you've just slept and woken up and had a very nice, lovely dream.
Yeah,
and that's it.
That's it, yeah.
You know? But when it's driven with some action behind it, then it becomes a vision.
Yeah.
And then from the vision, it goes into building the business strategy, the plan, you know, how much financing do I have to raise and all of that. Then you get that right. The next stage, which is the more difficult one, is aligning people to your vision.
Yeah.
Okay. Making them to buy into the vision that you have.
Yeah.
And that is something I've done. And thank God, done
How
quite
do
well.
You do that? Like, what would you say are the key things that have helped you be successful in doing that? Like,
in first of all, getting again, that is probably where the gender bit comes, or being a woman comes in.
You mentioned emotional intelligence.
Yes,
before.
And being able to get people to buy into the vision, not just working for you or working with you, but you know, buying into that vision and working with you to achieve that vision. You know, and I think in doing that, what you create and what we've created here is a sense of pride. Mm. You know, when I take people around the factory or people, you can see the staff, they are very proud of what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because the way that they were aligned to it was not, oh no, you're coming to work for us, you're coming, no. It's, look, this doesn't exist and we're doing it for the first time. We're in it together.
Yeah.
This is where we're going. And so, but helping them to see the end.
Sure.
And that's why it's important to start with the end in mind. Mm. If you start with the end in mind, then you can pass on, you can communicate that end to them.
Sure.
And once they can see the picture of the end, then it's very easy for them to align.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. I mean, like, I, you know, when I moved back to Nigeria, one of the first things, somehow I heard of your company, and I remember reaching out to someone here, and I came to visit the facility, and I was just blown away. and I didn't know you, but I was just personally interested. I took a whole day off and I came here. And this is a world-class facility that you have built, and significant impact on all of us. I mean, almost every Nigerian who's banked is carrying something from Secure ID. Anyone who's using a mobile phone is carrying something from Secure ID, and that must make you incredibly proud. Like, you know, and they don't know who you are, but like, you know, but they're using your product,
which is good.
You're
they don't need to
solution.
Know.
I love it. What? Tell us a little bit about just the challenge of having, like, you know, how do you build a world class facility and maintain that?
In
Nigeria.
First of all, in Nigeria then,
it
was resilience. In Nigeria now, it's even greater resilience.
Greater resilience.
Yes, but I think in saying to yourself that why not in Nigeria?
Mm-hmm.
Because I would say that was the underlying.
Sure.
You know, I saw the gap.
Yeah.
You know, and I said to myself, why not?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. And then you talk to people, they're like, no, it can't be done. Why?
Mm.
You know? And then you look at other companies and they've never been able to do it. And you're asking yourself, why?
Yeah.
So it's that question, why? Why not? Why not in Nigeria?
What is it that
you know?
What is it that they're doing somewhere else?
What is it they're doing somewhere else that they can do here? And I think that's what drives them. That's what drove me into doing it.
So Kofo, I've had the pleasure of visiting Secure ID. Actually, I did it like soon after I moved back to Nigeria in probably 2009-ish, 2010. And it's a world-class facility. So my big question is, how have you been able to build this kind of a world-class facility here in Nigeria? Almost everyone who's banked or anyone with a cell phone is using your products. Mm. And that must be incredibly proud for you.
Well, the how is a journey.
Sure.
Okay. And our story has always been constant generation of ideas, spotting adjacencies.
Mm.
Okay, so I started with the end in mind.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to build a world-class smart card manufacturing plant that can do this, 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 and this.
Mm.
But day one can't do it.
Sure.
So start a little bit, see the success, learn from the errors, then backward integrate, succeed again, see the success, learn from the errors or the mistakes, and then backward integrate. And every step of it has been with the alignment of people, you know. And don't forget that when we started here, there wasn't any other plant to benchmark.
Interesting, yeah.
Not in Nigeria,
sure.
Not in sub-Saharan Africa, you know. So my benchmark was the global first, somewhere in Europe, you know. And that was it. And I asked myself, why not?
Sure.
Why can't we do it? Oh, it's not possible. Why not?
Mm.
You know, and we task ourselves with getting global certifications that will make us and compel us to do whatever we're doing, you know, complying with global standards, you know. And it was good. And, you know, having the people go through this with us was a fantastic journey. The sense of pride, as I've discussed, was there. And together as a team, we were able to achieve that world class. I think we're also used to that standard that we do not want to bend down or go down on our standards, no matter what is happening around.
Regardless of Nigeria.
Regardless of Nigeria. Yeah. The thing was to build something that could be anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to pick a plant from Germany and drop it here, or pick a plant in Nigeria and drop it somewhere. Yeah. You know, it shouldn't be different.
Sure.
You know, and so that was the whole mindset. Awesome. And luckily, everybody else shared the same mindset.
No, that's awesome. And one last question for you. I'm curious how you think about legacy. What do you want your legacy to be?
Well, I think it's a journey that has started, but I would like it to continue. And one is seeing problems and being able to solve it, the most difficult ones.
Yeah.
The other is doing it at such high standards.
Yeah.
You know, and not settling down for anything,
yeah.
You know, so substandard. And then, you know, creating an environment that is so innovation friendly, such that whatever ideas come is able to thrive in that environment, you know. And of course, building a company that can absorb shocks, you know, it's something that we would like to continue.
Tell me more about the absorb shocks. I knew you
would ask that.
Yeah.
You know, as I said, it's not just about starting a company.
Yeah.
You know, every idea has a lifespan. And but building a company that can absorb whatever shock comes. I mean, when COVID came last year, did anybody even plan, you know, anticipate that there will be some virus called COVID?
Sure.
Could you anticipate that the entire world would be on, you know, compulsory public holidays, staying at home, lockdowns, you know, your factory not running?
Yeah.
Did you anticipate that supply chains would be very difficult? Yeah. Did you anticipate that, you know, purchasing power would be on the decline, the foreign exchange, and so on and so forth? So you can't. So you need to build a company. And and how do you do that? It's one is diversification. You know, I talked about sporting adjacencies. Okay, so we started, we can make bank card, but what else can the production line make? SIM cards. It can make SIM cards. But what else can it make? There's a need here. It can make public, you know, sort of high security ID cards, whether we're talking about driver's license or whatever. You know, and then it goes on. What else can it make? We can do e-ticketing for transport. You know. And so you're well diversified.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is a way of building a company that can absorb shocks. I'll give you an instance. We make SIM cards.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the year 2021.
Yeah.
You know, for security reasons, the government tells the telco,
No more SIM cards.
Wow. And you ask yourself, wow, what do we do? But that's what we do, you know. But because you're so well diversified, you're able to absorb those shocks that come in. And, you know, that comes in from being always proactive.
Yeah. So I understand the concept of being diversified and how that helps you absorb different shocks. But talking to our audience today, you know, what would you suggest to people who have multiple ideas of what they could do in the same business, and how should they go about it?
One is I believe in baby steps and do one thing after the other and do it very well.
Got it.
Don't forget that, you know, if you have a mindset that you want to create value. You know, I always ask young entrepreneurs, why are you in business? You know, it's not just about making money or making profit. It's very good. But what value are you creating? That's very, very important. So if you're driven by value, you know, it actually helps with the execution. You know, but having different ideas, please be well diversified, because the way the world is, you just don't know where it's coming at. Continually disrupt yourself.
Yeah.
Disrupt your ideas.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, you know, 2 years ago, we started a sister company, SID Digital. And the head of the company came to me and said, what do you want me to do? I said, I want you to disrupt me.
Mm.
Anything that we do, disrupt.
Yeah.
Find a better way of doing it,
yeah.
You know. And they are doing that, you know.
Awesome.
You know, but always ask yourself, you know, this idea has a lifespan.
Mm.
Somebody new is going to come and say, how can I do what they are doing better?
Yeah.
Cheaper.
Yeah.
Faster.
Yeah.
You know, and so always innovate.
Yeah.
You're constantly generating ideas.
This is great. You're reminding me of something one of my former professors, Andy Grove, who was the former CEO of Intel, you said, and I think it's the title of his book, where he always harped on it in class, only the paranoid survive. And the thesis behind that really is that, is what you just described, is that in any business, you need to disrupt yourself.
Yeah.
And you need to always be paying attention to what the competitive landscape is doing and play the chess match and say, someone's gonna try and disrupt you, so you need to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love it. This has been fantastic. I've learned a lot sitting here, and I want to thank you, Kofo, for all you do, because you are, and I really mean it, you're having a lot of impact on society, and you've already built a great legacy, and I have no doubt about the future, and I wish you nothing but great success.
Thank you very much, Tayo.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. So Tayo, this has been an amazing interview, honestly.
Good, how are you?
Amazing in the sense that, I mean, you did a lot of homework and...
No, I mean, I'm a big fan of yours. And
yeah.
So I've been watching, and I happen to also be very shortly a customer of yours. So I'm also very excited just to see what has been built and what you've done and how your journey and how you came through, because, you know, I know how hard it is being an entrepreneur in this market. And then when I think about it, 1998, it's like, what did she go through? You know, so I'm really glad that came out today.
I have questions for you because you're a fan of mine. I'm a fan of yours. And I think you're extremely relevant in this time, especially for the very, very young entrepreneurs that are sort of... trying to find their fit in the digital space as well.
Sure.
I remember when Paga started. I mean, it's been a journey.
Yeah, sure.
And you started when nobody knew what, you know, sort of money service.
Yeah. The word fintech didn't exist.
No, it didn't even exist.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember that I used to see those signs on buses, you know, on our local red buses.
Yeah.
And so now I was like, what's this company doing? And not giving up year after year.
Yeah.
And, you know, they say that it's easier to get to the top, but it's more difficult to sustain being there.
Mm.
So how have you, first of all, just to talk about your entrepreneurial journey, how you got to the top and how you've remained being the leading money service provider in Nigeria.
Yeah. Wow. So I think for me, the biggest thing is the people who've been around me, to be honest. Like from Jay, my co-founder, to Eric, our CTO, everyone on my leadership team, like literally all of them to a person are really bought in on what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
All our investors are really bought in on what we're trying to do, which is how do we make it simple for people to pay, get paid, and access financial services, right? And I think that vision has helped us every step of the way keep going, right? Keep going. And we've learned to be super disciplined about how we manage our resources and how we make more with less, right? And really accomplish a lot. So, you know, where... And, you know, I think something you said about when you were talking about, you know, being having multiple things so that you're absorbing any shock. And it's a journey to do that because we're building an ecosystem and there are multiple parts to the ecosystem. But I'm actually finding that is a big competitive advantage that we have as a business because, yes, in one part of our business, we have a couple of people who are trying to compete. But you know what? They don't do all the other things, right? And so... The people who are even in that part of the business that are competing, we see value in us over them. So that, you know, like, so that becomes interesting, right? And so building that out, and I think having the long view of what we're trying to achieve has been what has really helped us. We turned 10, I think, 2 years ago, and and we had a wonderful week of, you know, events with our team, etc. But one thing that really stood out to me was, you know, after we had our, you know, we had a like a banquet ceremony, and when we're leaving, my wife said to me, she said, "Ty, all your major investors came for this event." The biggest one of them, our largest institutional investor, literally flew in, arrived Lagos at 6 p.m., went straight to the event. After that event, went right back to the airport. Came in just for that event and said he could not miss it. And she said, you know, that's a testament of the relationships and the way you've managed the relationships, not just with your team, but also with your investors and your board. And so we're really proud of that, because it really, you know, there's a quote that I love. It's that if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I feel like that's what Paga embodies, is that, and in fact, it's in our logo. The reason why our logo is a circle is actually because we're a community, and there are multiple colors, multiple sizes, because there's, everybody comes with different aspects. And so, so that's a big part of sort of what has helped us.
I mean, because, you know, just looking at you and reading about you, you know, I saw a lot of similarities. You know, at the time you came, what you were doing was sort of, but not too many people understood it. No, how do we use mobile phones to, you know, to make payments?
No, people thought I was, everybody thought I was crazy. I mean, when, you know, the most shocking experience I had actually early days was when there were about eight of us in the company, we sat together to refine and define our mission and vision. We already had something that I came up with. And I remember the vision was cashless society. That was it, a cashless society. And to my surprise, the seven other people who had a facilitator, the seven other people in the room were scared by that idea. And they were like, what is this cashless society? And I was like, wait, are you kidding? Like, well, you all have quit your jobs to come with me on this journey. And I told you cashless society when I was talking to you about it. They were like, yeah, but cash can't go away now. Like physical, I'm like, no. I'm thinking of a world where physical cash does not exist. Now you have to remember there was no Bitcoin, there was no cryptocurrency. You know, so people did think, I was actually like, what are you talking about? So, you know, it's, but I think it was showing people. So for example, one of the first things we did actually was we built this beautiful BlackBerry app. That was a demo. And so I was able to, and this is the days of BlackBerry, show people this thing worked, you know, it was all mucked up. We never actually built it in live, right? BlackBerry was almost dead by then, I think, so we never even did it. But it gave people the concept, oh wow, okay, I could have an app where I link all my financial sources, my bank accounts, my cards, and use that app for everything I do. And for the millions that are not banked, this could be my way to access financial services. Or I could do it through a neighborhood store, right? And so I think people started cluing in a little bit on the idea.
I really like that, because, I mean, for people listening to us, it means that, you know, don't be afraid. Even if your idea, sometimes your idea could be ahead of the time. But stay with it, you know, it will, it will come. Stay with it, it will come, you know.
And there were good parts of what we, I mean, one big part of what we did was very ahead of its time, right? You know, so for example, we learned, so we launched in 2012 and we learned very quickly that actually the consumer direct side of our business of people downloading an app to use Paga was well ahead of its time. For a few reasons, right? Smartphone penetration was super low in 2012, right? It's still low now, 2012. Two, there was no digital form of identification in Nigeria. So there's no way to KYC people. That's why banks needed banking halls. And you realize that those were things that had to be solved before we could try to get people to use Paga by themselves. So we leaned in on the agent network. And building out this retail distribution, because that is where the mass market would use the service. And so that's going very well. And then 2019, when all those things changed, we now started pushing the consumer direct. And the growth has just been phenomenal since then, right? We now have over 3.5 million wallets and very active users, strong retention. So, it, you know, so that was something where It was well ahead of his time. So I remember in 2014 when we decided, don't invest in that now. That was a big decision then, but it was the right decision.
Wow.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I would love to ask you about your other markets because I know that you just didn't focus on Nigeria, sure. but you focused on that. But let's go straight to disruption. What are your thoughts of disrupting yourself for the future?
Yeah, no, this is something that we think very, very much about. And first of all, just thinking, what is the future of money, right? Mm. And how does money flow? And then what do we need and how do we play and where do we be? I think for us, it's very clear that cryptocurrency is the future. Mm. And I personally really believe Bitcoin could be the currency of the internet. And the ubiquity, the fact that, you know, it's decentralized 100%. I think governments will have their own digital currencies like the eNaira that's coming out. So for us disrupting ourselves, I'm an engineer by training. So I say there's no perfect solution. So you can always innovate and you can always figure it out. And so we are always thinking about what's that next thing. And the way we talk about it in the company is we have the business of today and we have to focus on executing the business of today, but we have the business of tomorrow. So some of us have to be thinking of the business of tomorrow. Like, where does this thing go tomorrow? Yeah. And there are parts of our business that I see in the next 10 years will not exist, right? And we will be a very different company. We just got our banking license. That's going to make us a very different company. So there are a lot of things that we've been doing that will shift. But I think that foundation and the infrastructure we've built, we'll keep building on top of it, right? And keep innovating.
Well, fantastic. Yeah. Congratulations. Well,
thank you so much. I appreciate
it. Thank you. It's been lovely having this conversation.
Likewise. thank you for taking the time and I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tayo. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Journeys in Entrepreneurship. This interview was recorded on the 16th of October 2021 at the Secure ID head office in Lagos. We look forward to hearing about your haha moment in the comment section below and invite you to join us next week Friday for a new episode.